I am Mark Medina, the Warriors beat writer with the Bay Area News Group, with the latest edition of the Warriors HQ podcast. In this episode, I have an extensive interview with Warriors assistant coach Mike Brown. We touch on a lot of topics: Draymond Green's return, his impact that his absence made on the team, how Mike Brown tried to handle the argument between Draymond Green and Kevin Durant last month in LA against the Clippers, what makes Kevin Durant distinguishable as a scorer compared to some other players that he coached, and LeBron James and Kobe Bryant, Mike Brown's role this season as the assistant coach under Steve Kerr, his aspirations or lack thereof of becoming a head coach, and what he enjoys about the Bay Area. Before I get to that conversation, want to make some plugs. We got the Warriors HQ podcast up and running on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you can listen to podcasts, we got them there. Be sure to subscribe to the Mercury News and the East Bay Times website. If you do that, you can get a Warriors commemorative championship book for free, all for $40 a year to subscribe. Lastly, follow me on Twitter, MarkG_Medina. I got a text messaging service through Purple where you can get real-time news updates via your phone for $5 a month. And lastly, we got a Warriors HQ newsletter that hits your inbox every day. Now on to my interview with Warriors assistant coach Mike Brown. Okay, well, I'm with Warriors assistant coach Mike Brown, who has some interesting things to say about the season, even if he thinks otherwise. But I think that the most topical thing right now with this season, this week, is the return of Draymond Green. For obvious reasons, he was out for, I think, 13 of the previous 15 games because he had, you know, that injury, right toe, his right foot, and now he's back. You obviously have worked closely with him. How was he handling that whole prolonged absence?
He's such a competitor that it was tough on him, but he handled it well. He knows that long-term health is the most important thing right now for us. You know, we take the regular season as a time to get ready for the postseason, because we know we're going to be in the postseason, and we know that we want to have a long run during the postseason. So we don't want to sacrifice any long-term health for anything early in the season. With his competitiveness, yeah, it was a little dicey for him, but he kept himself ready. He worked hard, and when his number was called, he definitely came out and performed the other night.
Yeah. What did you notice about his work kind of behind the scenes as he was trying to get himself back on the court?
He just like most guys that are NBA All-Star level players, you know, they get in a lot of extra work whether they're injured or not, and that was no different for Draymond. Matter of fact, a lot of times when those types of players, the elite players, are injured and they're out for an extended period of time, the more that our training staff allows them to do, that's the more they want to do. It's almost like they amp up their workouts, they amp up their focus, because they know how important it is to stay ready when you're not playing in games. You know, just getting shots up, just getting work out on the floor, it's not the same. And so they take it to another level, and that was no different from Draymond. He took his workouts to another level. He was coming in at night, getting extra work in, and it'll all show, or it'll all pay off as the season goes along.
You know what was funny? I noticed his last practice on Sunday when he was working with you toward the tail end. He seemed to be in a pretty jovial mood. He's dancing a little bit. I mean, for obvious reasons, he's about to come back. But what did you notice about that practice in particular as far as how he was showing with his body language?
Again, I think you hit it right on the head. You know, these guys are competitive, and when they know that they're numbers about to be called or they're about to play in their first game, especially being out as long as he's been out, the juices get flowing. And he just shows his excitement to not only to me but to the group during that shoot around.
How about when you're looking at the big picture of things? I mean, he had gone through earlier in preseason a little bit of a knee injury that sidelined him for 3 games, and then, you know, last season I think it was a combined 12 games. There was always kind of overlapping ailments with his shoulder, his elbow, his knees, his back, maybe all the above at once. How did he, from your vantage point, handle that whole situation?
The situation from last year?
Yeah, last year.
It was tough, but, Draymond, he's such a physical player, you know, that he's going to get a lot of nicks and bruises and dings. And so, you know, our medical staff, it's our medical team, they're one of the best, if not the best, in the business. And Draymond, you know, believes in him, trusts them. And so, you know, they're just going to have to make sure that they monitor those things and from time to time give him the necessary rest that he needs just because of how physical and how hard he plays. You know, he's on board with it. They understand what they need to do for him, and that's what allows him to stay on the floor, especially be on the floor come playoff time.
Right. I mean, the obvious value with Draymond, with what he's shown on the floor and then off, is how he impacts you guys defensively, and the numbers speak for themselves that you guys are obviously better defensively when he's there and when he was out. That was a little bit of a thing. But how would you break down, like, what were the challenges that some of the front court players handled with the reality of there not being a Draymond on the floor?
But you know what? He does a lot more things defensively for us than just defend bigs, you know. So it not only did it, you know, did it hurt our bigs at times when he wasn't there, but also our guards or our perimeter people. You know, Draymond's such a versatile defender that he can defend 1 through 5. And a lot of times he'll switch out onto a point guard or switch out onto a shooting guard, and he could take them completely out of their rhythm. And when you have that happens, it makes the game easier on all of us, not just our bigs, but even our smalls. And then to take it another level defensively, you know, you forget about how he communicates on the backside of our defense. So he's like another coach or quarterback on the floor when it comes to almost each and every single defensive possession that we go through. So when that happens, not only does our front court miss it, but, you know, our backcourt, our coaching staff, everybody that's involved. So it was a big miss when he was out, and our guys weathered the storm. We had different guys step up at different times. Our numbers might not have been there all the time, but, you know, we figured out ways to get enough wins and stay competitive and try to get a little bit better. And now he's back. Hopefully we could take off a little bit.
Right. Hey, just Mike, just given that you work with Draymond closely, you work with Kevin Durant closely, I know obviously time has passed since their argument at the end of the regulation with the Clippers game, but just given your role with the team and your familiarity with them, what things, if any, did you approach with kind of handling that situation as a team?
You know, stuff happens all the time, and our group is a close group, and it's like any family situation. You're going to have your ups and downs throughout the course of the season, and you work through them, and over time it gets better and you move forward, and that's what our group has done.
Yeah. What's the key in kind of being able to do that?
Just the trust and a belief in one another, and knowing that you guys have been through ups and downs in the past before and gotten through them. And so once you've established that foundation, it makes it easier going forward.
Right. So I know one of your many roles with this team on Steve's coaching staff is, you know, giving him the minute sheet and giving him an idea of how rotations are. And I was wondering, can you kind of compare and contrast this season versus last season of what the similarities and differences are of how you guys are looking of what extent of amount of minutes you're trying to have for the All-Stars, and then how you're handling, you know, a young bench compared to last year where there were more veterans with David West and Zaza Pachulia and JaVale McGee?
Well, I think that's the biggest difference, is trying to integrate the young guys that we have playing off the bench. For the most part, our starters, their minutes going into each game are roughly about the same. We would like them to not play over 36 minutes per game. Ideally, it would be great to keep them at around 32 to 34. But for us, you know, the max number that we shoot for when we're trying to establish a rotation before every game is right around 36 minutes. And they're, the times that they're in and out is roughly similar to how it was last year for those guys. But everybody else, it's almost like a plug and play where, you know, based on who the new young guy is that's getting minutes, we'll fit him in here. We may play him a little longer, a little shorter. But those guys, their minutes vary from game to game usually.
How did you guys reach that minute mark of 32 to 36 minutes?
It's something that Steve likes, and with me being in the league a long time, and same with Coach Adams, we just feel that that's the right number to be able to keep a guy rested and ready for the rigors of the NBA schedule. Talking to your trainers too, once you get up to 38, 40, 40, 42 minutes a game, at least on a regular basis, it's a little tougher for the body to recover game after game after game throughout an 82-plus game schedule.
Right, for sure. Now, you didn't have to deal with this last year, but I know it's always something that everyone's monitoring, and you were the interim coach at a certain stretch during the 2016-17 season and during the playoffs. Didn't have to do that last year, but how are things overall with Steve? Not of, asking you to play doctor, but just in terms of, having to be ready for any kind of scenarios like that.
Well, no, it's great. He's had to deal with this for a while, and every year, just like for anybody with anything, he gets better and better at managing it. And so he's got a game plan that he follows throughout the course of the day, and he's managed it very well so far.
Yeah, for sure. How do you kind of stay ready for all the different kind of scenarios?
Well, I've been in the NBA since 1992, so I've been around the block, and I think Matt Barnes said it best a couple of years ago is, you just keep yourself mentally sharp and into what we're doing as a team. And if somebody has to step down for a little bit, whether it's a player or a coach or anybody, it's like Matt says, it's just next man up. And it's the next man that has to step up and do a different role. It's not like they need to try to reinvent the wheel. We have a pretty good thing going here, and so we just have to keep managing that throughout the course of time that your role has changed.
Right. I know I've asked you this question and others have asked you this question, but just since some time has passed since I last asked you, I was wondering, what's kind of your current thought process right now in terms of head coaching aspirations? What are kind of the variables in play, and what's your overall sentiment that would determine, hey, this is something I would want to pursue versus right now you're an assistant coach with a team that's won a few championships?
And one day I'd like to be a head coach again. I'm not in any rush to do it. I feel like I'm at a good point or a good stage in my career, especially age-wise, so I have a long time to be able to pursue that opportunity if one comes my way again. But, I've said this many times before, I thoroughly enjoy working with this organization, thoroughly enjoy the Bay Area. I just bought a place in San Francisco. I couldn't ask for a better situation to be in as an assistant than this spot. Not only do I love the players and not just their ability to play, but them as people too. I love their personalities. I love hanging around them. I love the people that I work with. And so, because of the situation that I'm in right now, I don't really think about being a head coach a ton. I'd like to do it. I'd like to do it at some point down the road, but when, I don't know. The thing that, you look at, especially, being in this situation, being in the situation that I was in in Cleveland my first time, being with Pop in San Antonio, the one thing that I know that I'll look for is a connection between the GM. I think, in order to have any chance at all in this business, the GM and the head coach have to have a connection. And that doesn't mean they got to agree on everything that they talk about, but there has to be a mutual respect and a connection between the two in order to make it work. Otherwise, you basically have two separate divisions within one company, and most times, not all the time, but most times, if that's the case, it doesn't really work.
Right. I mean, when you're looking at that, I mean, you have a window of being with the Warriors. They're known to have that kind of relationship. The Spurs have had that relationship. But why is it so rare around the league for that to have that kind of relationship?
Well, I mean, because there are a lot of stakes involved, high stakes involved. There's a lot of money involved, and not only a lot of money, there's a lot of fame that comes along with it. And, you know, so from time to time, guys get territorial about their roles within this business, and it's human nature. And I think, you know, you not only find that in our business or throughout sports, but that's probably throughout all different types of companies too. Usually the companies that, and even businesses, you probably find that in police departments. Matter of fact, you do. I have a buddy that's an assistant chief of police, and there's always political ups and downs that he talks to me about. And it's not just because guys want to serve the people better. It's because guys understand if they're in this position, they're going to make more money, and they're going to have more power, and however you want to call it. So that's something that across the board in any company, whether it's sports or in the private sector or even the government sector. So, you know, if you have a situation like this, or if you have a situation like there is in San Antonio, or even with what I had with Danny Ferry in Cleveland the first time there, it makes it a special situation to be in. And in my opinion, you have a better chance of having success as an organization. And when that does occur, everybody has individual success once the team or organization has success as a whole.
Right. So, I mean, given your experience, you have another interesting window where you've currently worked with Kevin Durant, but with your other coaching experiences with Cleveland, with LeBron James, the Lakers, Kobe Bryant, how would you kind of look at the similarities, differences as far as what they're like as one of the key cogs on their team and also their scoring mentality?
Well, the one thing that I will say working with those three guys, you know, you can throw obviously Tim Duncan in there, and I'm sure there are a handful of other guys that I've worked with that are of quote unquote superstar elite status, maybe all time greatest ever type players, is that they all have a similar work ethic. You know, a lot of people think that these guys just walk into a phone booth and come out as as Super Tim or Super Kobe or Super LeBron or Super KD or Super Steph, however you want to call it. And, that's not the case. These guys get working a lot of times before practice, after practice, and then they come in on their own a lot of times when people aren't even here. And then their summers are also very excruciating when it comes to working out and keeping their bodies in shape and their minds sharp and all that other stuff. And those things go unnoticed, but all those guys have that common trait amongst them.
Yeah. How about the scoring as far as what makes them good scorers, and how do you see those three players approach in terms of how different it is, how similar it is?
Well, I mean, in my opinion, the scoring comes from their work ethic and their competitiveness and their will and determination. You know, all those guys that I mentioned are capable of going and putting up, you know, 40 a night, if not more. But it's something that they've worked on, and it's something that they have the endurance to do. Because if you think about it, being the best, just like us as a team, when you have an individual that is going up against somebody like a Kobe or somebody like a LeBron or a Tim or a KD or Steph, in our business, most guys are extremely competitive. And so that, a lot of times, is a special night for them. They want to make their mark, or they want to be able to say, hey, I busted KD's behind on the defense end of the floor. He only scored 10 points on me, or he only scored 15 on me, and he's averaging 28. Same with LeBron or Kobe or Tim. And so individuals get up to play those guys on a night in and night out basis, and so your endurance has to be unbelievable in order to do that 82 plus times a year.
Right.
And all those guys work on their endurance throughout the course of the year and even in the off season to help them be able to score the way they do. But you know, again, the work they put in, it allows them to score from all three levels for the most part, and it gives them different or creative ways to be able to put the ball in the bucket.
Yeah. I mean, on top of that, specifically with Kevin, he's had a unique situation this year and ever since he's joined the Warriors, but these past two seasons specifically, Steph has been out for some period of time because of an injury. How would you say
what his mentality has been in terms of how he approaches that role when Steph is off the floor and on the floor. I mean, obviously he's been productive in both scenarios, but how do you see the similarities and differences of what his role is and what he's doing when Steph is hurt or when he's playing with him?
Well, just like any other superstar slash scorer, when a guy like Steph is out, KD knows that he's got to step up his scoring production, because that's, you know, 24 plus 25. I don't even know what Steph averages, but it's 24.
I think it's under 30 right now.
we'll just call it 30. That's another 30 points that are off the table. And KD is more than capable of doing it night in, night out. Now, does he want to do it for 82 plus games a year? No. Can he do it? Yes. And so having that luxury, at least for us, anybody else that has that KD's played for, is just an added bonus. You know, and being able to say, you know what, instead of me just getting points in the flow of the game, there are going to be times when I'm going to have to press the issue a little bit, and he's more than capable of doing that, and that's what makes him and all those other guys extremely special.
Yeah. And, like, I got to shift some gears here. Just kind of some lighthearted stuff. I know that ever since you've come to the Warriors, you've kind of taken on affinity for, you know, some hip hop artists out here, Too Short. What else do you have on your playlist? That's local.
I don't really know music like that where most guys are from, but there are a lot of music venues out in the Bay Area. I do like jazz, and so there's a spot in San Francisco called the Black Cat that I frequent often, as much as I can get over there. When I move to San Francisco, I'll probably be going there a little bit more. They always bring in terrific jazz musicians. And then, you know, there's some places here in Oakland, too, that are fun to venture to listen to music from time to time. But I'm an equal opportunist. I do. I love Too Short. You know, I love hip hop, but I also listen to a little soft rock, like I said, a little jazz and country, and especially when I'm on my Harley and I'm going, you know, and I'm gonna go cruising for, you know, couple hundred miles, I'm gonna turn on some country music and lean back and on my Harley and just have a good old time.
You get an endorsement out of that plug for the jazz club in SF?
I hope so. I don't know. I didn't even think of it like that. But you know, and I'm gonna call their owner and tell him I better get a couple of few drinks on the house next time I come.
How about so like Too Short, E40? They're local. They have connections to the Warriors. You know, they're often at Oracle Arena. How often do you cross paths with them?
You know, E40 obviously his music is off the charts, and he's still making himself relevant in today's hip hop game. But you know, it seems like he's always at our games. He lives in the Bay. He breathes the Bay. He's an icon in this area. And you know, he and I will pop up every once in a while in a venue outside of the sports world. But he comes to a ton of games, and you know, we always exchange hellos when he does, whether it's at home or on the road. So he's probably around the most, and he's probably the one that I cross paths with the most, especially during the hoop season.
So I understand you're going to like concerts with him?
No, so we like last year we were at this event for the interim mayor in San Francisco. You know, I just said just different venues from time to time that we may cross paths, just out and about.
Yeah. So the Harley, you get some good run here in the Bay Area. Where do you like to take that out for a ride?
You know, I actually like taking it to San Francisco because you know the parking is limited over there, and then you know also you may have the Bay Bridge traffic that backs you up a little bit. So from time to time, if the weather's right, I'll hop on it and I'll ride it over to San Francisco and do whatever I do over there, and then ride back.
Yeah. So how tough was it to you loved the Oakland area, but you decided to move to SF? What were kind of the variables in play with that?
Well, you know, just the fact that we'll be moving next year, and you know, kind of goes into our conversation or the question that you asked me earlier. Would I like to be a head coach? Yes, I'd like to be a head coach someday, but I'm not in any rush, and I could be here for the next X amount of years and feel like I got the best life in the world. So that's the biggest thing. The Oakland area is terrific. I live right on Lake Merritt. I mean, restaurants, bars, good people. I mean, it's beautiful down there. I couldn't ask for a better area to live in, at least right now in my life. And if we were going to stay in Oakland, I'd stay right where I'm at. But because we're moving to San Francisco, I started looking early, not necessarily looking really hard, but I found a property that was priced right and that I absolutely loved, and so I jumped on it.
Is that one of those things of learning from experience? Because I know when you're down in L.A. with the Lakers, you were in Orange County in Anaheim Hills. That was quite the drive.
Well, that's when I had kids. And, you know, when I had kids, both my boys play sports at a pretty high level, and they wanted to go to modern day high school, and so we lived. You know, I didn't want them to have to make the commute. You know, I figured I'm the father. I'm kind of old school in that regard. I said, hey, I want to make my life as easy as possible for my kids, and I'll figure out this commute myself in the morning time. And that's the only reason why I lived as far as I did from the practice venue and where we played.
Right. So, I mean, you're just being a team player and sacrificing your role for the common good.
Yeah, I was a team player. That's it. But now, you know, I'm single. I don't have any kids around. San Francisco is a lovely city, just like Oakland is. And that Mission Bay area, I believe, is going to be off the charts in time. And it's already nice. And you got the San Francisco Giants two blocks north of my place. You got Chase Center one block south. And so I couldn't ask for a better location to be in at this time of my life.
Yeah. So, I mean, Mike, I know you're all about winning championships and you're worried about this opponent, but has there been any sense of satisfaction these championships have all come at Cleveland's expense these last few years?
You know what? The biggest reason why I would say I like playing Cleveland in the finals the last couple of years is because my son plays football at Case Western Reserve, which is on the east side of Cleveland. So when we go back to Cleveland for a 7-game series, he and all his buddies come and hang out. And, you know, we obviously, so when we clinched to Cleveland the one time, they all came to the after party at Morton Steakhouse right there. So to me, more than anything else, that's what makes it special. Obviously, I still have some friends and stuff back there too. But I mean, more than anything else, and this is also part of the reason why I said I'm not in any hurry to go be a head coach, is, hey, it's about the championships, baby. And the more rings that I can put on my fingers, in my personal opinion, it's going to make me happier. And it's also going to make me, in my opinion, that's that much more relevant at the end of the day when it comes to trying to leave a legacy in the game.
What was that vibe like, I mean, this last time in Cleveland? Just, I mean, given it's so different for obvious reasons that LeBron's not on the team anymore and they're kind of in a rebuilding stage.
Really, it was no vibe. I mean, I think we were meeting, Steve and I were meeting before shooting around, and, you know, from time to time, you know, Steve would read the press clippings, you know, and he was like, did you read anything about us playing Cleveland in the sports sections? And I was like, no. Yeah, which is true. There's nothing that was really written. And, you know, they seem to be in total or full rebuild mode. And so what has happened in the past will stay in the past.
Yeah. Hey, well, Mike, I know you're a little skeptical of, hey, how we'll make this interesting. But I think you did make it interesting a little bit. It was fun chatting with you for a little bit.
Hopefully. hopefully it was a little interesting. And it was fun chatting with you. I always have a good time chatting with you. Shoot, I mean, you guys don't know it, but I took Mark to one of my local haunts one time in the Lake Merritt area. I'm going to give these guys a plug, Bar 355. And you know, we had a few drinks. And when by the time he left me, I don't know how he made it home, but he realized, I think, how fun that area could be.
Yeah, well, I only had soda, so I was good.
So, okay. Yeah, you did have soda in your drink. I do admit to that.
That is true. Well, good times as always, but I appreciate being able to chat with you on things that we can't actually record.
Well, thanks so much to Mike Brown, the Warriors assistant coach, for all his time and insight. I really enjoyed the conversation. I hope you enjoyed the conversation as well. So be sure to leave a rating and review for the Warriors HQ podcast. You can follow us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. Be sure to subscribe to the Warriors HQ newsletter to hit your inbox every day. Follow me at @MarkG_Medina. And lastly, subscribe to the Bay Area News Group, whether it's the Mercury News or the East Bay Times. We have a good deal going on around the holidays. $40 a year if you subscribe to the website. You also get a free Warriors Championship commemorative book from last season. But for now, thanks so much for listening.